Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Tuesday, September 5th, 2006, Carrboro Board of Aldermen regular business meeting. Alderman Haven O'Donnell is, I think our thoughts and prayers should be with her, as she is at the coast with 94 seventh graders, and she'll be rejoining us at our next regular meeting, and apologizes for her.
Yeah.
Professional absence. I think they're seventh graders. Anyway, I'd like to begin the meeting by recognizing Town Manager Steve Stewart for just a moment.
Okay. I'm pleased to announce to the board and to the public a new staff member that's with us tonight, Kendall Brown, who is a new planner.
Kendall, where are you?
Kendall has 14 years of planning experience and has done a little bit of everything in planning over the last 14 years. She started with us mid-August, and we're just really delighted to have her. Kendall, thanks for coming.
I feel like she's already part of Carrboro. So.
Kendall is regularly to be seen out at Weaver Street Market and worked for many years for the town of Chapel Hill as well. Welcome, Kendall. We have, I know, a number of people who are here tonight to speak on items on the agenda. Are there any people here who are here to speak on a matter that is not on our printed agenda? Please come on up, Sharon.
Well, good evening, Mayor Chilton. Board members, you know that I'm Sharon Cook. I've been here a few times before. And you may recall that 9 months ago I came before this board with a petition from more than 500 citizens requesting that the next highest vote receiver in the November 2005 town elections be appointed to fill the vacancy which occurred when then Alderman Chilton was elected to serve as our town's mayor. When speaking with town citizens about the issue, the overwhelming response was, why wouldn't the next highest vote receiver be selected? It was a question which I could not answer and which was never adequately answered by this board, other than by explaining that our town charter allows for such an appointment. Last November, this board, including most of the members seated here tonight, agreed to revisit this citizen request at a later date. At a subsequent planning retreat in February, which included all of today's seated members, it was agreed that the issue would be considered after a time of cooling off from the highly emotional process which ensued when 12 applicants were interviewed to make a selection to fill Mayor Chilton's vacated alderman seat. I'm here tonight to ask that the board respond to the request of these 500-plus citizens and address the issue of how we will fill future vacancies when it is a direct result of an election to a higher office in a timely, fair, and democratic manner. Last November was the second time in the past decade that this has happened. It will occur again. According to the town attorney, the town charter is vague in this regard, allowing for a seat to be filled by appointment rather than ensuring that the basic constitutional right of citizens to elect their representatives is respected. There are many issues which have been raised and resolved in the past 9 months. It is now time to address this lingering issue. The foundation of our democratic form of government is respect and regard for citizen rights. The right to vote and elect our representatives for public office is the cherished citizen right beginning with our country's earliest days. Tonight, I'm asking that this board publicly address this issue and resolve it by the end of 2006, including conducting any required public hearings should we decide that we do need to make a clarification and a change to our town charter. This fall is the perfect time to open the discussion as we are in an off year for town elections and a discussion can commence without regard to individual political aspirations. This is not intended to reopen the very painful process that all of us participated in as a result of last November's election, but rather it's an opportunity to learn from that experience and to find a more open, progressive, and democratic mechanism to address future vacancies. We ask that this issue be resolved well in advance of next year's filing deadline so that all Carrboro citizens will know without a doubt the process for filling all anticipated vacancies when they cast their votes for alderman and for mayor. By this time next year, Carrboro will be proudly showcasing our new high school. Among the many classes that our students will be required to take before they can graduate is civics. I ask that this board take the lead in setting the highest standard for local election processes and assuring that our town's legal codes reflect the true spirit of democratic representation and leadership as a best practice example for our soon-to-be Carrboro High School students. Thank you for your consideration, and does anyone have any questions?
I have a comment, Sharon. That's on our agenda for the 19th.
September 19th.
September 19th, so two weeks from tonight.
Okay, good. And that will be a discussion, or then a public hearing at a later date, possibly?
It's a discussion and whatever results from that discussion.
And I think there would normally be some type of public hearing at some point in order to make that sort of our official request. I don't know that it's required, but that's how we would normally do it. But I appreciate your bringing this subject back up, and I think all of us don't want to let it get away from us. Now is, as you say, a good time to discuss it when we're sort of far removed from any personal implications that any of it could hold. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sharon. Did anyone else want to speak on an issue that is not on our printed agenda? Ellen Perry. Mike, can we use your microphone? Thank you.
Hi, guys. I was over in Raleigh today for a money power for person real, a grant. We had about 40 self-advocates there. And 1,000 petitions. Whoever hasn't signed a petition needs to see me, okay? And I have them with me tonight.
What's your petition for?
It's for money followed a person out of the institution into the community. And that means that people will have services and staff if they need it.
Exactly.
And that's very important.
Very.
So, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for keeping us abreast, Ellen. With that, let's move on to our regular agenda. Before we go to the consent agenda, item 5, Alderman Haven O'Donnell had called me this evening and asked that we not... consider item 5 on our agenda, a resolution making an appointment to the OASA Board of Directors, because she would like to be here to comment on and vote on that issue. It's been delayed a time or two before because we haven't had an opportunity for 7 of us to be here together on this subject. So I don't know what the board's pleasure is.
I know that several of the folks who have applied for this position are feeling kind of pressured and stressed and wanting the issue resolved. However, I think when a board member makes this request, we need to honor it just out of courtesy, and also, you know, pragmatically, I might request that we delay voting on the agenda or something. But, you know, so it's just kind of as a courtesy, although with an apology to all of those who have applications in to fill the seat, and to say that we understand your frustration, and hopefully we will be able to vote on it when we reconvene in 2 weeks.
Alex.
Understanding that, I think in this case, however, it's important to note that Randy is absent because of a prior commitment that she can't get out of. So in that case, you know, I think we're honor-bound to honor that request, because she does want to participate in the discussion.
And there will be times when, you know, the situation is such that we simply cannot delay making a decision on certain matters, but this is not one of them. So,
I agree with Jackie's point about considerations for each other's interests in a vote, but I want to add that I think that consideration cuts the other way as well, and I mean, not to focus too much on this case, but certainly, you know, Randy's known about this trip for some time and has known, presumably at least since the weekend, what the agenda was. And not to single out her, because whatever her circumstances are, we don't know. But I hope we would all try to raise this kind of question earlier, particularly out of respect for, you know, in this kind of case, for the applicants. So they're not expecting a decision on Tuesday night. Mm-hmm. then find out they don't got one.
Okay. So moving on to our consent agenda, I know that item number C4 on the consent agenda, there's some a couple of people who are signed up to speak, and one of the members of the board asked us to pull that out of the consent agenda. Is there anything else from the consent agenda that we're not going to pass en masse?
Move the consent agenda except for item 4.
Second. But I'd just like to make a comment. We've had some really great applicants for a lot of our boards, and we should be commended that people want to participate as much, so I hope that those individuals that weren't selected would please again apply to participate for boards. That's all.
Amen. All right. The consent agenda, except for item number 4 relating to the town's reservations policy, has been moved and seconded. All those in favor of the other items on the consent agenda, please signify saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, the matter passes unanimously. I'd like to go straight to item C4, an ordinance amending Chapter 14 of the Town Code. Mr. Manager, do you have any comment on the item?
This was an item that our town attorney was asked to draft as a result of some situations with reserving town facilities, and our attorney certainly can speak for himself, had indicated he felt like in order to strengthen our position to be able to make sure we had folks follow appropriate procedures, that some additional language probably needed to be added to the town code.
All right, we'll come back to that in a minute. Thank you. Okay. And can you refer? I'm sorry, you may have just said it. Somebody was speaking to me. Can you refresh my recollection about what? For this item, one of the issues that sparked a discussion about our reservations policy was, for example, people who were holding large birthday parties at Wilson Park or that type of thing without having arranged for that in advance. Was that the type of?
That's some of it, but it's more of putting out advertisements in a variety of fashion. And Anita's here, Jones McNair's here, and she can speak to more of the specifics, but it was more a case of people advertising for events without ever having gone through the reservation process. And there have been instances where a particular facility had already been booked and an organization who didn't necessarily follow the procedures wound up advertising an event at the same time.
Okay. There are a couple of people who are signed up here to speak, and I'll call on them first. And if there's anybody else who'd like to speak after that, we'll recognize you after that. The first speaker is John. Can't quite read the last name. Devine, Deving. No, not that one. He's speaking. John Devins. Sorry.
Okay, I wanted to speak about the C4 on the agenda. And in particular, I want to talk about the really, really free market. And I guess I'm not really much for speaking in front of groups, so I'd like to talk about how I came about the really, really free market and what brought me here. Several months ago, I heard about the really, really free market and lots of people who had been taking part in it. It's really, I'm sure a lot of people here have seen it, but it's become kind of a big community event. And, you know, to a large extent, I saw it as sort of this thing in Carrboro that was going on that was counter to everything that's going wrong in this country right now of losing identity, losing community, and having a good space where we can all get together and not have to buy anything, just get together and have a good time where people of all ages, whether they're older, younger, students, no matter what their background is, could just come together and take part in using community space. I believe the space is called the Carrboro Town Commons, so, you know, being a good open space, I just thought it was a really great thing. And when I saw it going on, I noticed that it wasn't just one or two people, but it was a lot of people coming together, lots of people bringing things, lots of people advertising as well to tell people what was going on, lots of people cooking and bringing potlucks so that people could have food, so people could eat lunch together. I have seen puppet shows. I've seen everything that you can imagine there, music, just lots of things that the you could bring a family to, that you could bring your friends to, anything, that anyone could come together. And I heard about particular people who were being targeted over the issue. I know that I heard that at least one person has received some kind of threats, financial or some sort of ticketing threats from the town. And it just really struck me as how could this happen for something that's become something so great for the town, for the community getting together. And then I noticed, well, after I had heard about how great the Really Really Free Market was, and I had been bringing stuff myself for the event, I decided to film a PSA for the People's Channel. And I guess in a way that's kind of advertising, right? Well, I was filming a PSA about something that I thought was so great and wonderful for a community event, and now I feel like just the fact that I'm filming this PSA to tell people about this wonderful community event has been criminalized to an extent. And as I was filming a further PSA this last month, or I guess it was this last weekend for the last Really Really Free Market, I did notice some people who appeared to have worked for the town, I don't know, who were asking people if they were serving food in this potluck. And at the time I was working on filming for the Really Really Free Market for the PSA, and now I know that this might be considered advertising and that this could be a ticketable act, I guess. And I find it absurd, and I was wondering, and I know that we talked about this together beforehand with the mayor, and I don't see, and this comes from talking to my parents a little bit about the issue, who they become supporters of the Really Really Free Market after seeing the PSA, actually. Why couldn't we have another status for people who are not for-profit institutions to use the space without having to pay the fee, which I believe is at least $100, maybe more, to use the space, because obviously we're not drawing in money for anything we're doing. We're not McDonald's using the space. We're just a group of people who are trying to use the town, Carbo Town Commons, as a commons. And so from that point, I was wondering, and I know that there might be someone who has kindly offered to pay the fee for this, the permit, but I'm also concerned if this is a sustainable plan, because if this person decides not to pay anymore, or that the fee can't be paid, or if we're successful, which I really hope we are, 5 years down the road, the person doesn't live here anymore, what will we do? And how will we be able to continue on? And I would like to see this flourish. I would like to see 15, 20 years down the road, I can come to Carrboro and see some sort of event like the Really Really Free Market, whether or not it's using the name. And I wouldn't like to think that my PSA that I'm putting out on the People's Channel, also a great public resource around here, is a criminal act that I could be ticketed for.
Okay. Well, first of all, I don't know what you mean when you say you're not a good public speaker. You did a great job. I guess I'll call on the others. We'll hear from some other speakers now, and we'll have some type of discussion about this issue in just a minute. So.
Well, thank you.
All right. Thank you, John.
Thank you.
Vincey Darrow.
I'm not really going to say anything. I just brought a mission statement that was crafted by a group of people who were involved in organizing these a while ago. So it's just more information about this event in case people are interested. And if anyone out there would like a copy of this too. And like I said, this isn't something that represents the event as it stands now. It's just one thing that came out of it along the way. So.
Thanks, Vincey. Is there anybody else who'd like to address the board about this agenda item or about the Really Really Free Market? Please come on up.
Great baby.
We'll bring him back.
Yeah. Bring the baby back.
Hi, I'm Brian. Let's see. I could speak at length about the positive role that I feel the Really Really Free Market serves in town. I feel like the person before me has already done a decent job of that. I'd like to say that I feel like in looking at the free market issue and the issue of the use of public space, which has become contentious in Carrboro lately and is a hot issue right now, that perhaps one solution for public grounds that belong to the town itself is that events on those grounds that are free and welcoming to all, that are open to the public, not private parties, not for profit, corporations, not for-profit enterprises, that those events perhaps could be free. I'd like to say I also am dismayed to hear that participants in earlier free markets have been threatened with penalties. I'd certainly not like for people like John to be afraid to shoot PSAs for such an organic community event that has been, in my opinion, really nurturing to community here. I'd like to note that although I've not been at half the free markets, the ones that I have been at have been very, very peaceable, very comfortable events. And also, I was at the event, the free market that was double booked. I believe somebody said something about events running when one was reserved and one was not or something. There was a free market that coincided with an event called for by the La Leche League, the breastfeeding association, and in my experience, being there and communicating with people involved in La Leche League, that event went fine. It went quite smoothly. Let's see. And I don't know. I just want to see this event resolved in such a way that there can be free markets and other such healthy, community events in Carrboro, for a long time to come. I understand that perhaps people who are involved in decision-making process here are afraid that if the free markets are permitted, that will open the door to all sorts of other events and all sorts of other chaos and craziness. That reminds me of a story. My friends Kate and Rachel Wetton, they have two daughters, and they live here in Carrboro. And one of their daughters wrote a book when she was about 8 years old, and she wanted to submit the book to the Town of Carrboro Library. And, she got books from the library. She loved the library. She wanted to be a part of the whole thing. And, she and her mother went to the library and with the book, asking if the library could take and stock the book. And the librarian said, no, there's no process for that. What if everyone, bought their book in? How would we accommodate all of the books? And as I understand it, eventually a process was established, and they took the book, which now sits by itself on a shelf set aside for such books. So I'm not afraid myself that if the free markets are allowed to go on, that the Carrboro Town Commons will be overrun with hula hoopers and dancers and free markets. But for me, we can only hope to live in a world in which the libraries are filled with books that our children have written, and in which our community spaces are used often by people for healthy and positive events. Thank you.
Thanks, Brian. Is there anybody else who wanted to speak on this matter right now?
I have a question. Sure. Would there be a chance to speak at all after you all have had time for discussion?
Not normally, but I have a feeling that we won't come to the ultimate resolution of this matter just now. So you'd be welcome to speak right now, or you could write us a letter after this meeting or come to a subsequent discussion of it.
Very well to have a public hearing at some point.
we'll see where we wind up. Alex and Jan and Jackie.
It strikes me that there are several issues that are raised by this, which in many respects have to do with the definitions, which we don't have in front of us right now, which are functions or events that are subject to the reservation system and what that means and what it doesn't. I think the first speaker talked about perhaps some additional tweaking that we might want to do within the context of those definitions. This may work within a certain context. I would tend to agree, however, with the speakers that there is a level of inflexibility that we need to work with. both in, either in the definitions or in what we're asking people to do or not to do. And then obviously, you know, we don't want to subject our public facilities that are open for, you know, spontaneous gatherings to a regulation which says that you can't invite anybody to it, which is what it actually says in the language. Understanding, of course, Mike, what you're trying to get at. I think we need to work on this more before we act on it. I agree.
Okay. There are, you know, kind of two areas coming up here. One is specifically to do with the really, really free market, which the speaker's addressed, and the other is the resolution that's in front of us. I have comments on both. One is, actually, this is something that maybe staff can clarify, because when I heard over the weekend that there had been the issue raised for the free market about the insurance, I went back to our June agenda, I forget June what, where we had the table that showed what required insurance and what didn't. And the language in terms of food was prepared on the premises or catered and sold to the public. That's what was in that table, and I don't recall changing it at that meeting. And so the way I read that, it would mean that if they're bringing in their food and not preparing it on the premises, or if they're not selling it, then they don't need insurance. That's different from what Coquita wrote in the letter that's in front of us. So, you know, if there's
from a June 23rd.
Right, to Jan Berger. I'm looking at the August 4th. August 4th letter.
Okay.
Was on at our places. So, you know, so I'd like to know if for some reason I'm misreading what the policy was in someone's view or not. But, you know, I'd like to address that insurance issue in this context. The other thing, one of the speakers, I forget which one, raised the point of, you know, spoke of nonprofits and whether they should have to pay fees or not. And I think it's worth looking at, you know, very, you know, sort of low level of organization, nonprofits with a revenue of less than some threshold, maybe $10,000, for whom we could waive fees on events like that. And I doubt that there are so many of those that it would be a big bite into our revenue stream. But at least I'd like to raise that as a possibility for discussion. Then as to the ordinance change, I emailed my colleagues about this morning, and I actually posted these comments on Orange Politics. And I think the thing about the advertising point is fine, but my reaction is that, you know, to impose these penalties means having a way, knowing who's organizing the event and having a way to contact them. So if we know how to contact them, I think the first friendly way of contacting them ought to be to say, hey, do you know we have a reservation policy? Here's how it works. Do you want to come sign up? So it's not to impose a fine or a sanction, but to invite them to participate in the system. And, you know, I think that would work. And then my other concern was with the phrase otherwise invite. And I think that just is too broad a category of people, you know, and Alex made reference, well, you know, what's a function? And the way I read this is that it's the property that's subject to the reservation system, not the function or event. But, you know, maybe I read that wrong. But if it is the property, then I think there are going to be cases where people, you know, like the example I gave earlier, invite friends to come meet for a picnic. And there ought to be nothing wrong with that. I mean, clearly they can't use the space if someone else has reserved it. But otherwise, you know, it shouldn't come into the sanctions section of violations for this.
Jackie and then John.
I think this means we're not done with this issue yet, you know. Just as an aside, It's very weird for everybody sitting at this table to be sitting at this table as a them instead of as a community activist. It's a disconcerting experience for us. It's very difficult in trying to manage a creative, spontaneous town because there are conflicting goods. There's the need to have rules so that people know what to expect and so that things follow through and so that if you sign up to use a space, you have that space. That's good stuff. As much as I don't want it to exist, there is the need for money in order to keep things running. That's just a reality. The other good is we are a creative, spontaneous community that thrives on freedom of expression and on new ideas and on going over the edge. And so those two goods, both of which are needed for a community, conflict sometimes, and right now they're conflicting rather intensely. And that just means we're not finished with this discussion yet. So I think the board needs to continue the discussion with staff and certainly with input from the really, really free market and other folks who may be feeling a need to use that space. It is important to sign up for the space just so you're not conflicting with other people. Now, how that sign-up happens and what the rules and regulations are surrounding it and what the fees are surrounding it, that's all kind of what needs to still be tweaked some.
Just briefly, I want to say I'm glad to meet the folks of the really, really free market. I had always heard and read the anonymous postings and stuff like that, and I'm glad I contribute my campaign signs to the first really, really free market, I guess. And it's a good thing. And I don't think nobody's going to get arrested in Carrboro for... I mean, Carrboro is a communist community. I mean, a community-oriented town. And that's, you know, I mean, come on, this is Carrboro. I think the... there is, like anything else, and it's true what Jackie says, you know, when you're in this other side of the bench, you know, on the side of the system, you have to live by a set of rules and laws or choose anarchy and that's not how we got elected. And I think for the same safety of the same people that you're trying to serve. There's a misconception that, you know, I mean, poor people, we always have to subsidize things for poor people, and poor people can't pay this and that. I work with the poor and the oppressed all my life, and I can tell you that it is a patronizing mentality that we cannot come up with $100, believe me. If the guy leaves the town, a good idea will live forever, and they will always, I'm talking about poor people. Will come out with $100, $500, whatever needs to be paid. Now, there are all creative ways. I mean, I think you guys had already developed a very creative idea, and that's not going to, you know, kill the idea. I think I've read this, actually, ordinance objectively, thinking this is a good way, actually, to prevent, you know, corporate America and the old folks who wants to sell stuff in our public spaces from abusing that privilege, you know, that all taxpayers are subsidizing and that we own. So I see it from that point of view. It actually protects the common space of the whole community. On the other hand, organizing community festivals, I can tell you that if you sell food, whatever, I mean, it better be a potluck, and everybody always would be allowed to have a free picnic if it's really, really free. If somebody gets intoxicated, you know, it was their food. It was, you know, I mean, that happens. But if it's an event organized by an incorporated organization, which they do exist, and you can register as an incorporated corporation with the state of North Carolina, and correct me if I'm wrong,
$60 to be a nonprofit.
They won't break them either. Still, that stuff protects you. I mean, America is about lawsuits, and you get sued for anything and everything here. So I think the idea is great. I think nobody's going to go to jail for being creative and promoting community, but seems like actually preventing folks from you know, especially for-profit or commercial enterprises from using public subsidized space to advertise, you know, profit-making activities. I don't think we should be supporting that. So I hear you. I'm with you. And let me know if you need some more signs.
Okay. I think that, well, I hope that those of you who have come here on behalf of the Really, Really Free Market can see that there is a lot of goodwill here on the Board of Aldermen, and that we're all interested in seeing the activity in general continue. I just want to suggest, and it sounds like we're going to continue to work toward some type of compromise or accommodation that will allow this to happen. But it also, and as one of the speakers mentioned, someone has volunteered to pay the fees for the Really, Really Free Market. Let me suggest that we cannot, it's simply not the way we do business to make a decision about how fees should be structured and whether whether the Really, Really Free Market should have to pay $100 or whatever. Those type of decisions are not made at the drop of the hat. We need some time to consider it. We need to give our staff an opportunity to give us some reaction to such issues. And so we're going to bring this issue. This issue will come back to us, is what I'm trying to say, later this fall. Does anybody know when the next Really, Really Free Market is supposed to happen? Say it now before it becomes illegal. Sorry, I'm just kidding. What do you say?
October 4th.
October 4th. So I hope that y'all are hearing some goodwill on this side. Let me suggest this, that if somebody in this room who is in any way affiliated with the Really, Really Free Market would go down and file a reservation for October 4th, 7th, for October, we will certainly make sure, I will make sure that somebody pays somebody not in this room pays the necessary reservation fee so that we can continue on with having a Really, Really Free Market while we work on coming to a policy that suits everybody better. But I think the from my perspective, the biggest frustration in dealing with this is that the few communications I've gotten have been largely anonymous, and they have all taken the position that everybody's responsible for it, and so nobody's responsible for it. Ultimately, somebody needs to sign up for a reservation. I agree with every one of the speakers that there's a way for the rules to work and to work well with the Really, Really Free Market. But I want to make this point, and it's what I was trying to say to some of y'all in the parking lot. There have to be some kind of rules about it. There have to be some kind of rules about it. How people use the town commons. And so if someone will do us the favor of demonstrating some good faith from the market and file for a reservation for October 7th or whenever it is, then that would certainly be a great step toward everybody acknowledging that that we all want to work this issue out. In the meantime, let me ask the board members, what do y'all want to do with the ordinance amendments that are in front of us? I like the points that Dan raised, but perhaps it's better to send it back to the staff before taking action on that, and they can take his thoughts into account.
I would just prefer to do that and perhaps just have another brief discussion after staff has had a chance to work on that before enacting anything. I think Mark's suggestion about trying to get some folks who are working with the organization to kind of plug in with us. Just to piggyback on what Mark said, I think we're all trying to work something out here that's going to work well for everybody. We've seen a discussion about public space, which has spun into something really nasty where people started taking sides and identifying enemies, and there aren't any of those in this room. I think everybody wants us to work well for everybody and values what you guys do. So it's just a note of caution. Maybe we can set a better example for this discussion than the other one that's gone on.
Well, I just want to make clear that regardless of whether they have reservations or not, there will be no dancing, right? Or hula hooping.
She's joking.
Not for just me, anyway. Clear. Sure, you don't want to see that.
Yeah, I'm glad that we're not going to see that.
Mr. Mayor, I support the idea. I also give the advice to the folks that, even Alcoholic Anonymous, which is anonymous, functions in that way, and they do business worldwide, so
they manage to
it could be done.
Okay. All right. Unless there's some further comments, so I take that as a motion from Alex Zaffron to refer this matter back to the staff for some further changes to the proposed ordinance amendment.
And particularly to consult with Dan on the ideas that he brought forward.
Maybe there could be a little committee with, like, maybe a member of the board, staff, and somebody from really, really free, so that, we could work it out, because I know what's going to happen is we'll get something from staff, and then board's going to react to it, and then really, really free is going to react to it. So if we could have all of them in the same place at the same time, it might be more efficient.
I don't know. Is there anyone in the room who, would be willing to step forward to participate in some discussions with the...
Really participate.
Yeah, or someone can get in touch with me later if... you want to do that.
So you would like to be the board person involved in that?
I think Alex volunteered.
Oh, okay.
I'm happy to do it.
No. I think you'd be great at it.
Dan came up with the content, so.
It's right up your alley. Mm-hmm.
Are you going to be volunteered for that?
Yeah. Okay.
Wait a minute. I'll disclose okay. Location.
Okay.
Right. Well, we,
so it's now 10 of 8?
Yeah. No, it's, yeah, exactly. All right. So I'll take Jackie's comment as a second for that. So it's been moved and seconded. We refer this back to staff and empower Alderman Coleman to try to meet with staff and people involved in the really, really free market regarding this matter. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, matter passes unanimously. We are on item D.
Just where somebody is.
Oh, we have them. We're in limbo. We have a couple of people who are here tonight to receive their charges as new or returning members of some of our town advisory boards. Is Ryan Elting here? Ryan, we appreciate your patience. Come forward to the town clerk's desk, if you would.
I just want them to know what they're getting into.
And Tom Coors, if you're here, could you come up as well? Thanks, Tom. Well,
I'll just read this to you and have you sign off on them. As members of the Environmental Advisory Board, you will, number one, advise the Board of Aldermen on policies, ordinances, and administrative procedures regarding environmental protection and the conservation of natural resources. Two, suggest to developers ways to utilize energy-efficient design techniques such as daylighting, siding, solar exterior lights, and other solar energy techniques as they become economically viable. Three, adopt a set of guiding principles or goals for the EAB and review those goals periodically, determine if they are being obtained. And four, take any other action by the Board of Aldermen. And if I could get you to sign off on this, and I'll send you a copy of these. Thank you. If you would like to meet the board. Thank you.
All right, great.
Thank you so much for your service.
Thank you.
Good luck with thank you for coming.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Our If David Markowitz and Justin Abbott are here, if you would come up to the clerk's desk.
Was Justin Abbott here, Mayor? Yes. Okay.
He is.
I'm sorry.
Coming right now.
I'll just read this to you and have you sign off on it. As members of the Appearance Commission and Neighborhood Preservation District Commission, you will, number one, initiate, promote, and assist in the implementation of programs of general community beautification within the town's planning jurisdiction. Two, seek to coordinate the activities of individuals, agencies, organizations, and groups, public and private, whose plans, activities, and programs bear upon the appearance of the town and its environs. Three, direct the attention of the mayor and board of aldermen to ways in which the town government may take direct action affecting the appearance of the town and its environs. Four, make recommendations upon any permit or other item referred to the commission by the Board of Aldermen, Planning Board, Board of Adjustment, or Zoning Administrator. Five, seek to promote, enhance, and preserve the character and heritage of neighborhood preservation districts. And six, take any other action authorized by the Board of Aldermen. If I can get you to sign that.
Yeah.
You would like to meet the board?
Sure.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You'd like to meet the board?
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome.
All right. Now, we are on to item D1. Report on Oil Transit Fleet Recommendations and Passenger Amenities Program. Mr. Manager.
Steve Spade, who's our new Transportation Director for Chapel Hill Transit, is here tonight. He's going to discuss the condition of the Chapel Hill Transit Fleet, recommendations for future bus purchases and a transit passenger amenities program, and staff has prepared a resolution for the board to consider accepting the report. Steve, welcome.
Thank you. Mayor, members of the board, thanks for allowing me to have a few minutes tonight. I've been in town, I think, a whole 5 months now and have been charged with trying to figure out what some of the major issues are for Chapel Hill Transit. One of the first things that we looked at was the capital facilities at Chapel Hill Transit, and we've developed a couple programs, we think, to improve those. And you were provided copies of that, so I won't get into a lot of detail, but I thought what I might do is summarize the highlights of those documents and the recommendations, and then maybe give you an update on where we are on a couple things. Probably the most significant document of the two is the document that talks about the vehicle modernization fleet replacement plans. The Chapel Hill Transit operates currently has a fleet of 86 buses, and we require 72 buses each day to provide service. There are two industry standards that we applied to analyzing the fleet. One was that you should maintain an average fleet age of about 7 years, and the second is that you should maintain a 20% spare ratio in your fleet so that you have available buses for vehicles that need repairs, inspections, or are otherwise incapacitated. Looking at the current fleet and future fleet needs, what we're facing here in Chapel Hill are the need to increase a number of the services we're providing, and that's going to have an impact on the fleet. As a matter of fact, if you look at the demands that we've got over the next 6 months, the fleet size should probably grow to about 93 buses. We'll have a 77-bus peak hour requirement as of next spring that says we should have a fleet that's at least six or seven buses larger. The fleet is aging. As many of you know, it's been some years since there's been the last actual attempt to modernize the fleet was the refurbishment of some 10-year-old coaches in the system. In addition to looking at the age of the fleet and the condition of it, we also talked about what the fleet ought to look like in terms of vehicle size and configuration, and have made a series of recommendations. The first is that regarding the fleet replacement, that we need to purchase about 45 buses over the next 5 years in order to maintain fleet age, necessary fleet age, and we also need to grow the fleet to about 99 buses. We should also set a goal of replacing 8 to 10% of the fleet each year so that we don't end up with an extremely old fleet that forces you to not provide a very comfortable, cost-efficient service, and also forces you to have large expenditures at one time. In terms of the type of vehicles, we've recommended a couple things be looked at differently. First, we're recommending that the vehicles that be purchased are low-floor type vehicles as opposed to what today's vehicles are referred to as standard floor. And a standard floor has three steps at the front where you go in. It's kind of the stuff you're all used to seeing here around town. The low-floor bus actually eliminates the steps at the front of the bus so that a person steps directly from the curb onto the bus and then can move back into the seating. If there's any steps, then they're in the back of the bus over by the rear wheels. A couple advantages to this. One is the vehicles are cheaper. Secondly, they're much easier and faster to board, and they make the service much more accessible to those who are in wheelchairs because you don't have to deploy a lift and take a long time. You just simply lay a ramp out on the curb, and people can get on the bus much more easily and freely. So we're recommending that all purchases that be made for Chapel Transit from this point forward be low-floor buses. We're also talking about a mixture in the size and type of bus. We think there's an application for something larger than 35-foot buses that we currently operate, and we're actually looking at, in this first purchase, a number of 40-foot buses and actually some 60-foot articulated buses, the type that flex in the middle. Yeah, the accordion type. Or as the paper referred to them as bendy buses. I'd heard a lot, but I hadn't heard bendy bus before. Those vehicles will allow us to operate from park and ride operations and different kind of high capacity peak hour routes to serve more people, have less overcrowding, and also control labor costs. We can actually, in a 60-foot bus, carry three times the number of passengers that we can in a 35-foot bus with the same labor costs. So it'll allow us to provide more service, we hope, and control labor costs. We've made suggestions for over the next 5 years for bus purchases, and the total need for bus replacement based on today's dollars is about $17.5 million. We currently have $7.5 or $7.7 million in federal money available to make bus purchases, and we have a bus purchase or a spec out on the street requesting bids. So we have about a $10 million deficit over the next 5 years that we're going to try to eliminate. After an analysis of the different sources of funding, we think there's probably two things that make sense. Probably the most likely is for us to seek congressional earmarks. And use congressional earmarks to pay 83% of the purchase price of buses, rather than rely, obviously, on the local governments to pick up that cost. The second option, which we think is probably less favorable, is to look at leasing buses. The advantage is you spread the cost out over a 12-year period. The disadvantage is you're probably paying 30% more in your purchase price. So the strategy that we're following today is starting to develop strategies to work toward congressional earmarks over a long period of time to upgrade and modernize the fleet. We will then each year begin for all of our funding partners put together a capital improvements program that starts to identify what kind of funding we've got, what kind of needs we've got, and what kind of challenges we got that you can see in with a five-year picture and updated every year so that you'll be able to see this at more as the long-term needs. We currently have a bus spec on the street. We have funding that $7.7 million to purchase, we think, with the way the prices are today, we'll be able to buy about 19 buses. And we're recommending that we buy 10 35-foot coaches, two 40-foot coaches, four 60-foot articulated buses, and then three hybrid buses. They'd be 40-foot hybrid electric diesel buses. We think that hybrid propulsion is probably the way to go in the future, but the buses with hybrid propulsion have only been in operation for 6 or 7 years now, and there's some question about whether or not they'll last the 12-year life expectancy of a vehicle. So our recommendation has been start with this purchase buying three hybrid buses. Each time we buy buses, make 10% of our purchase hybrid buses for the next 3 or 4 years, and then as the technology is proven more sound, if the local governments want, we can up the percentage of the fleet that we buy that's hybrid propulsion. That is about all I've got on buses, and if I don't know if you have any questions on that or if you'd like me to talk a little bit about that. Yes.
Two kind of different questions. One, you talked about cutting labor cost with the bendy buses. Mm-hmm. Is it more stress on a driver to be driving a bendy bus and you're, you know, we'll have twice the number of people? It seems like it's a harder bus to drive. Are there some equity issues there for the drivers?
Actually, the articulated bus drives the same. It actually turns a corner and tracks the same as a 40-foot bus because of the engineering causes the rear axle to turn.
Mm-hmm.
Our drivers had the same concern. We had a couple vehicles in to demonstrate over the last couple weeks. And we heard things like, oh, the buses are too big for the Chapel Hill, Carrboro streets. We'll never be able to drive them. And when we took them out on the road, they actually maneuver through the same locations.
Okay.
It is an issue. You will be carrying more people. So if you relate stress to the number of people, there's probably an issue. But in terms of the actual operation of the vehicle,
okay,
once the driver's learned, it's not a big issue.
And my other question was, with the diesel buses, I know we've talked about this before, but are we moving towards using biodiesel with some of the diesel buses?
We will be burning, by edict, low sulfur, ultra-low sulfur diesel, and we will experiment and look at experimenting with biodiesel. We've, I think the folks on the Public Transportation Committee have suggested that we look at alternative fuels beyond hybrid as well as some of the T-boards. So we will be looking at doing that with the remainder of the fleet.
Have you had any experience in your past work with bus systems that use biodiesels?
I have, and they haven't always been good. That's
okay.
Why we need to be kind of careful. But we experimented with ethanol,
mm-hmm,
in Iowa, obviously.
You have to.
And had mixed results.
Okay.
We actually did one experiment for about 8 years that was positive, and they did a recent experiment that they had, there was a 3-year agreement they had to discontinue after 6 months. And I think it's more the technology that the manufacturer has than the idea of using alternative fuels.
So the manufacturer of the bus or the manufacturer of the fuel?
The manufacturer of the equipment and the technology that you used on the bus. I don't think it has anything to do with the fuel. I think you just have to be really careful who you go to work with and what kind of technology you use, and maybe start slow.
Interesting.
Okay.
So,
okay.
So I think there are a lot of successes out there.
Good.
That we can rely on.
Joel.
I was looking at the report, and I wanted to ask, is it Chapel Hill Transit's continued sort of policy to use the 5307 funds 100% for operating purposes, or will any of that money be diverted to capital?
Well, we could use 5307 money for capital. You've got the choice. I've raised the question of for the policy folks, and I'm not sure what the answer is going to be. Typically, formula funding, 5307 funds, are used partially for operating expenses and partially for capital expenses. So you could make that decision in the budget process. The problem becomes that you shift more of the operating costs than to the local governments. If we can be successful in getting federal earmarks or finding other sources of federal funds, then it really makes sense to continue to use those 5307 monies to offset operating costs. But the problem you find is that you find a shortfall in your capital funding if you rely on that. One final point, I think, is that regardless of what percentage of the 5307 funds we used, we probably always have a deficit in the capital program and have to rely on earmarking.
Okay.
If there are no other questions, let me just say welcome to Carrboro and
thank
to
you.
Our community. We really appreciate the work that you're doing, Steve. And I think this this report shows that you're doing a good job in thinking ahead. Please be in touch when it comes time to discuss potential earmarks. I'm sure that we could help to make the point to Congressman Price and others that this is a really high priority issue in the town of Carrboro's estimation.
Thank you.
That means we need to keep a drill like more Democrats in Congress.
Joel, we have one more thing.
My other question is just in terms of the extension of more routes. Mm-hmm. When could you anticipate that occurring?
Well, let me tell you briefly what our plan is for scheduling an analysis of that. There's a public forum scheduled for September 21st in which we're going to invite people to come in and share their views about what ought to be done to improve transit services. In the past, those meetings have been held like in January, and that's too late for us to have an impact on a budget process, so we've moved that public forum up to September. At the same time, we're going to be doing a thorough, complete count of all the people that get on and off the bus on the Chapel Hill Transit Service District, and we'll be able to then go in and identify where the system is performing well, where it's not performing well, and how we're allocating our resources. And we'd like to take that analysis of our current system and lay it beside what the public requests are, and by December or January, actually have some recommendations on service improvements that the local governments can consider in time for implementation for the next fiscal year. And that'll be the cycle that we try to stay in.
And you're going to do the survey, I'm sorry. In what
our goal is to do the on-off count at the end of September and then have the analysis done by the end of October.
And will you be also counting the feeder services as well?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Alex and Dan.
Just want to acknowledge that it's a really important point that you raised in using a long-term strategy to go after federal earmarks, which has up till now been sort of a case-by-case thing. Essentially, when there's no money, everybody scrambles around and goes to David. David has been very successful when asked, and we hope you'll keep us abreast of how you progress in that, because it's very helpful to David for the local governments to assist him in speaking to members of the rest of the congressional delegation.
Our charge right now is to develop a strategy that we're going to share with the Public Transportation Committee, and board member Coleman is a member of that group.
And Alex.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Once we've run that by the group, you can tell how new I am. I don't even know who's in those meetings half the time. I apologize. I think our plan is to run the strategy by that group and then, based on that, involve all of the policymakers in the area.
Good plan.
I just wanted to elaborate on Mark's welcoming you to Carrboro. Not everyone probably knows that you've recently moved into a home in Carrboro,
sure.
And I think we're all
delighted to have you in the community. So.
Well, we really enjoy the community. It's a great place to be.
You make the right choice. Welcome to Carborum. And also,
don't get him in trouble now.
Thank you. Thank you for bringing the idea of the 60 bus footers. I have seen them working beautifully in Costa Rica, which has very narrow streets, and you know people drive everywhere. But probably this will help convince the Triangle to accelerate the process of bringing the train system faster than once they see it, you know.
Certainly.
How people gonna get used to the idea that why don't we put 7 of these buses together and you know then we're gonna say, hey, it's cheaper to buy a train or a fixed rail system. But thank you.
Thank you.
Right. And so people who wanted to participate in that process you were talking about, the meeting is September 21st.
Right, at the Carborough Century Center.
At the Century Center regarding bus routes and service
right.
levels and that type of thing.
Date right, Dale?
You reserved okay. it and paid your fees, right?
We trust.
Sure hope so. We go back and check.
Can we put it on the website?
It's been advertised.
Can we put it on the website?
Sure we can.
Yeah. I think we have a banner, maybe.
And I think we've just nailed down the date, and we'll be getting it out to make sure we get the right public.
Are you sure it's at the Century Center, not in Chapel Hill? Center of Chapel Hill.
I think we actually moved the location last week. There was some confusion last week as we were trying to find the location. So,
all right. Well, there will be more information about that on the
right.
Town of Carborough right. website. So you can look there for confirmation about the location. September 21st, transit forum, public transit forum. Okay.
Thank you
very much.
Thanks for having
me.
Thanks.
Move the resolution accepting the report.
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passes unanimously. Mr. Manager, item D2, a report on the request for creation of a Smith Level Road Task Force.
Okay. As the board will recall, on June 20th, Terry Buckner had submitted a petition requesting that the Board of Aldermen consider establishing a task force to identify measures to improve pedestrian and vehicular safety on Smith Level Road. The board referred the petition to staff for consideration, and a resolution accepting the staff report is recommended for the board's adoption. And Trish McGuire has a brief presentation for the board. Trish.
Good evening, everyone. The petition that was submitted to you all in June was submitted by Ms. Buckner, representing 99 other residents and property owners in the vicinity of Smith Level Road, and the petition requested that the board establish a task force to examine basically safety measures in three areas: the safety of the ongoing protection of the University Lake watershed, the provision of a non-vehicular trail for folks who live down at the southern end of Smith Level Road to the new high school, and safe access for folks who live along Smith Level Road or in developments along Smith Level Road for their vehicles as they travel there. And the petition noted that there's traffic and speeds and types of vehicles that are presenting concerns. In a separate action from the petition, Ms. Buckner also requested that the board take a position with the North Carolina Department of Transportation on the issue of a pending driveway permit application for development in Chatham County. Sure, sorry about that. Also requested that the board take action in relation to pending driveway permit application in Chatham County. And in follow-up at that meeting, the board had a discussion of how they might set up, how a task force could be modeled on the High School Homestead Road task force that's been in operation for a couple of years. You also adopted a resolution to send a letter to the Department of Transportation regarding this driveway permit application, and referred the petition to the staff for consideration and scheduling a further discussion, and that's why we're here basically tonight. The letter was sent with the resolution to the Department of Transportation, as well as the local delegation later that month in June. And staff has also made a request to staff of the Traffic Assistance Branch of the Department of Transportation, the office in Greensboro, for data collection and other information strategies, problem solving, or recommendations that they might be able to provide us to respond to the information that was submitted in the petition. And they did receive a copy of the petition as part of that communication. Just in terms of context, the southernmost portion of the town limits ends at the new Carborough High School site, so right there on Rockhaven Road, or just below, just above Ray Road. And our planning jurisdiction extends further down to the intersection of 15501 and Smith Level Road. And Chapel Hill has planning jurisdiction on the east side of Smith Level Road, and our jurisdiction is on the west side of Smith Level Road, south of Woodcrest Drive. In terms of the Department of Transportation, as another interested party in this discussion, their jurisdictions for within our Metropolitan Planning Organization encompass three different highway divisions. And so Durham County, while it's not specifically related to this request, they are part of our MPO and part of the forum within which we discuss transportation questions, that is to say state changes to state roads. That's a forum where we address these things. And so the division that is Durham County is located within is Division 5, an office in Durham. Our division for Orange County is Division 7 in Greensboro, and the Chatham County road system, state road system, is within Division 8. So their office is located in Aberdeen. So just to show that there's kind of a lot of folks to bring to the table from both the local government perspective as well as the this Department of Transportation perspective. And this map just illustrates those points with regard to the local governments. The areas in green are Carborough's jurisdiction, the red and pink, Chapel Hill's. The darker colors both represent the city limits of the two towns. Orange County's, and actually this is a joint planning area out here in blue, represents the rest of the Orange County piece in the map. And then down here, the white, is Chatham County. So we provided some information for you to consider in looking at this petition. Just some information basically about the watershed protection efforts that have been taken. The watershed zoning that we have in place currently dates back to the late 1980s. It actually started much earlier than that, but was formalized with water supply watershed protection legislation that the state adopted. And those changes that reduced development potential to the conditions we have presently in place. In addition, in 1995, in the context of discussing with DOT what kinds of road improvements would occur on Smith Level Road, both the towns of Chapel Hill and Carborough adopted resolutions dealing with entranceway protection of the road, of Smith Level Road, that is to say. In terms of transportation planning, we do have a transportation improvement program, which is within the, that is to say, a project within the state TIP, and that project is intended to provide bike lanes and sidewalks along Smith Level Road between Morgan Creek and Rockhaven Road. And the limits of that project were pulled up to Rockhaven Road as part of that whole entranceway resolution adoption and further discussions with the Department of Transportation in the mid-1990s. And those actions also coincided with the towns of Chapel Hill and Carborough redefining their planning jurisdiction, their future city limits boundaries, and that occurred in 1995 as well. There is some greenway planning that's been done in the southern part of our the jurisdictions. Carborough's doesn't extend much beyond the Rockhaven Road area for greenway plans along a tributary of Morgan Creek. Chapel Hill system does extend the Fan Branch Trail down to is proposed to extend the Fan Branch Trail down to the Southern Community Park. So currently there is not a great deal of other greenway trails that go further into the jurisdiction down to the southern end of our both towns' jurisdictions. Our existing bike and sidewalk policies in Carborough don't call for improvements, bike or pedestrian improvements, to Smith Level Road beyond, that is to say, south of Ray Road. And there is a note in the item for you that we are looking at the opportunity to submit a grant request for a bicycle planning grant for the town. And you all did a set aside in your current year's budget matching funds for that grant if we're able to proceed with an application and so forth. if it's awarded, bicycle connections to the Smith Level Road could be considered. And we do have on our plate looking at updating the bicycle policy and, of course, making the, if that were to be done, making it consistent with any actions that might follow from that. Just a little bit of information about the format for the that was followed for the Homestead High School Road Task Force. The scope of that project was somewhat more limited in that it looked basically at one intersection and, this, and the provision of pedestrian safety through that intersection to the nearby schools, but across an arterial road. It did involve multi-jurisdictional participation. Of course, both towns, Chapel Hill and Carborough, as well as the county, and members of the school board and North Carolina Department of Transportation staff. There were elected officials and staff members involved with that. And our estimate is that there have been about 20 hours of meetings that occurred between late 2003 and the present. There have been other meetings, you know, individual meetings as well as staff efforts to follow up on meetings, but those aren't quantified. So our recommendation in the report for you is to accept this report and to commit to continued efforts in relation to environmental protection and safety measures along Smith Level Road. Happy to try and answer any questions. Thank you.
So you are not recommending the creation of a task force?
Well, I think that I wouldn't say that. I would say that there are I would say that Steve might have a would like, probably like to elaborate on that. A task force is one approach to deal with the circumstances. There are a number of other initiatives that are underway right now. It may not be the best approach. It's a mechanism for bringing a number of stakeholders to the table. That's a pro. A con is obviously that many of the elected officials in this community, as well as the staff and citizens too, are committed to a number of initiatives, and it does present somewhat of a it takes time away from other initiatives, to be straightforward.
I have more to say about that later after we hear from other folks. Yeah.
Any other questions for the staff? We do have three people signed up to speak about this.
Actually, I had a question for staff. With all this information given about Smith Level Road, I guess one question I had, how does this play into the DOT's previous sort of mandate or feeling that some of Smith Level Road should be expanded to four lanes?
Well, that's an ongoing question at this point. We are. I believe Dale could tell me when the most recent data. There's been a recent reanalysis or reprojection of information on the Smith Level Road piece. So I'll let him answer that.
NCDOT staff has recently currently working on a new forecast for the projected 2030 traffic on Smith Level Road as sort of the beginning point of scoping the project along the lines of what this board has requested with a smaller cross section for the section between Morgan Creek and Rock Haven.
And can I ask a follow-up question? And so are the assumptions, because, you know, we had a long discussion about that since I've been on the board about DOT's assumptions about who's going to be traveling, that you are literally just coming to Carborough. You're not trying to get over to the university or to the hospital if you're coming that way unless you live on that street. So I guess I'd like staff to keep us apprised of what those assumptions are about. Because as long as it's still limited to what the board wants, then I'll go along with assumptions. But if there's a deviation to, again, go back to that four-lane idea, which at least previous boards have been opposed to for a very long time. Pardon? So, you know, I'm always a little wary when we talk about DOT assumptions. But that could be me.
Well, I don't think it's you.
We sent another letter, Dale, was it last month?
Yeah.
To DOT, to Debbie
Barber,
reiterating the town's position and the agreement that we thought we had with DOT some, 15, 16 months ago now. And
I haven't received a response. I don't know if you have or not, Dale. So
I just ask that you keep the board sort of, as you do, informed and kind of bring it to our attention when they respond. That's okay. All I have.
I'll reserve my comments on that.
Okay. Terry Buckner.
Thank you. I will be very brief. I put the petition in, and it was my understanding after that discussion that the task force was going to be created as a result of the staff recommendation. So I misunderstood, and I apologize for that. So I'm here tonight to request specifically that the board ask staff to go forward with the task force. And to also let you know that I submitted the same petition that I submitted to you to Orange County commissioners who received it favorably and who, as I understand it, are awaiting to hear from Carrboro on the creation, taking the leadership on the task force creation. So just to remind you, we ask for this task force because of the amazing increase in traffic on Smith Level Road, just trying to get out over to the park and ride lot in the mornings. I wait through 10, 20 cars, which didn't happen 2 years ago. And 2 years ago, just zipped right out. And so there's a lot of cars coming from 15501 now. Just like Jackie predicted the last time I heard one of your Smith Level Road discussions, they're coming down 15501 from Chatham, going right up to Merritt Mill and cutting over to the university.
DOT said that wouldn't happen.
The other thing that I'm noticing is there's a lot of dump trucks cutting down Culbreth. So there's a lot of effort to bypass South Columbia Street, and we're the ones who are getting the brunt of that. Mm-hmm. So, again, I request that you go forward with the task force, and I apologize to staff. I know that they are busy and have a lot of other obligations, but this is important to us. So thank you for your consideration.
Steve Marshall.
Thank you. I also will be very brief. I'm Steve Marshall. I signed the petition that Terry circulated. I own a bicycle, and I own a car, and I know which one I would like to be able to take down Smith Level Road in the morning, the bicycle. You know, it's a area I used to cycle on with some comfort, you know, going back 5 years. Now the place just feels like a death trap. There's a lot of construction traffic. Some of that may dissipate with time, but I think the quarry traffic is not going to go away. Big trucks. And so it's the volume of traffic, the density of traffic, and the nature of the traffic is truly escalating. And I kind of feel like that Smith Level Road's under attack from the DOT at either end, where they've constructed the beginnings of a four-lane highway. And I want to also applaud the town of Carrboro for taking a position on trying to preserve the beauty of the street and the countryside feel of that. And it is a beautiful area and a wonderful entrance to the town of Carrboro. But I have to tell you that it's changing rapidly, and those changes are going to accelerate with the construction of more facilities close to the county line in Chatham County. The high school is also going to make a difference as well. So I would love for my kids to be able to ride their bikes to school or be able to walk to school. I think that would be a wonderful community resource. We're within your planning zone, and we need your planning. And I do apologize to staff. I know there's a lot of other things on your plate, but this is really, if our chance to do something about this is now. If we don't do something about it now, it's going to get away on us, folks. So, and I really want to applaud you all for everything you've done in the past to try and preserve this part of the country, that part of the county.
And John Butcher.
Thanks. I'm the Democratic Precinct Chair for Damascus. It's the west side of Smith Level Road, basically. I want to start off first by, again, thanking you for all the things you've done to protect Smith Level Road in the past. We had a forum for the commissioner's candidates back in early June, I believe, and really the number one issue on the minds of constituents, we did this together with Dogwood Acres Precinct, with Damascus and Dogwood Acres Precinct, is really these traffic issues and safety issues on Smith Level Road. Now, we know a lot of this problem comes, you know, it's not from Carrboro or from Chapel Hill, but from what's going on in Chatham County and what's going on with DOT. I just want to make the point that because of the jurisdictions involved, because it is Carrboro and Chapel Hill on Smith Level, and particularly because it is Chatham where all kinds of things are going on, hopefully they may change a bit with the new board coming in and DOT, that I think we really do need a task force that gets the leverage of Carrboro, Chapel Hill, Orange County to bear to try to protect this resource. So I hope you can participate in that, and I thank you.
Yeah, I'm wondering whether DOT is taking that into account in their projections, but Alex?
With that, I just want to point out a couple of things. I think a very effective case has been made here for why we should go ahead and move forward with this and work with our neighboring jurisdictions. The model of the Homestead High School Task Force, which is what I think Terry kind of had in mind, has been very effective, not just from a planning perspective, and I don't think we're looking to undo any of the initiatives that we have already undertaken. However, what a task force like this can serve to do is both to bring some new ideas to the table to enhance those ideas and initiatives, but also to provide essentially an organized form of public advocacy and bring the stakeholders to the table and to advocate for and articulate their positions, which I think would be very useful in our ongoing discussions with NC DOT. We obviously don't want to hector and lecture them. That has not proven to be an effective strategy. But when we can consistently show what the interests are and that those interests are actually represented personally rather than simply through the governments, in that case it was a very effective model. That group has, keep your fingers crossed, I ain't making no more promises, but as far as I know, we've wrapped up our work. In our last meeting, we said, this is it, we think we're done, we've got it all taken care of. There's a schedule to go ahead and let the contracts, DOT has taken the first phase of it in-house, so we think that that's wrapped up, and what I'm getting at through that is that I understand staff's concern about using resources to support this enterprise, but that enterprise we hope will no longer be consuming staff resources. So with that, I'd just like to move that we ask staff to proceed with working with the petitioners to establish this task force.
I hear you also volunteering that you're now available.
I'll do it. I've already volunteered you for something, so it's only fair.
Turn about. Jackie?
I think anytime 100 government's owned by people, and that's something that larger entities forget, but hopefully small entities like Carrboro, we know that, and the municipality is the people. So whenever 100 of the people who own the municipality say we want to get together and work on an issue, unless it's something really weird, and even as we've seen earlier, sometimes when it is something
a little
unusual, I think we support it. And so even though I agree with what you want to do, to me it's more an issue of you want to do it. That I will second Alex's motion.
One concern I have, and this is not a concern against doing this, but is that, you know, we made a decision last winter to do an update to the Northern Small Area Plan, and that has not begun. And as far as I know, correct me if I'm wrong, the preliminary discussions for that have not even begun. And, you know, maybe this is something that's much easier to kickstart and get going with, but, you know, I do want to be, you know, if we're committed to doing that, I think we should be clear on, you know, how we're prioritizing things and, you know, whether, you know, if it's going to take some time to get the one started, that, you know, can we do both simultaneously? Do we need to stagger them, you know, over a few month period or something like that? I'm just raising those as questions. That
I think we would need to have this task force not be open-ended, to have it have a deadline, you know, a product due by April, you know, so it doesn't, because I know these things can take on a life of their own and drag on, much like talking. So if we could, you know, put like an April deadline, or I'm arbitrary with April, but a deadline on it.
I have no argument with that general concept. I would ask that we think about this, though, that we go ahead and go through the process of formulating it and letting staff, and I guess I'll help do that, and Terry, I'm volunteering you, to develop, to further develop the task force's charge. And within that, part of our charge to them in developing the charge is to, how about that, set a sunset date on that? Does that work?
Mm-hmm.
The high school is going to be opening. Can we try to get things rolling so that we come together?
That's what we're doing.
Yeah. Well, you know, I guess one question that I have is, it seemed to me that if I understood it, this petition was presented to this board and also the Orange County Board, which makes sense to me, but maybe it was presented and I missed it, but it seems like the Chapel Hill Town Council needs to be engaged as well, because a significant portion of the area is in their planning jurisdiction. So that's my only.
If I may, I'd like to point out the number of the 100 petitioners are here this evening. And if you wouldn't mind if they would stand up and be recognized, just to see how many just came to this meeting.
Sure.
And we figured since you weren't free marketeers, you were probably here for the half. Although there could be some crossover, very easily.
We feel the time is truly of the essence. We are under the gun with the plans to put a big box, essentially, at the ends of our driveway. There is no time, truly, to debate and determine and committee. This is an urgent time for us and for our neighborhoods.
Why don't we go ahead and get the ball rolling, and we'll take that under advisement.
I have some comments to make. I think the task force is a great idea, and I sympathize how you feel living in that world. I had lived in crowded roads also. There are two things that troubles me. Number one, we have a very experienced and professional staff that has worked with this beast called the DOT, and they know them really well. The gentleman here to my right, Alex Saffron, is Mr. DOT himself. I mean, I don't know anybody who knows so much about how he has not missed a single meeting ever to anything that has to do with DOT. He knows all the jargon. And we know what can happen when we play. I mean, this guy, this is not only just a governmental organization, but it's a political entity. And this is Scarborough. We have, you know, this little power, relatively speaking. We need to, this is not an issue that just impacts Scarborough, but impacts Chapel Hill, the county. If we're going to take on the bulldog, you better, you know, have an 800-pound gorilla behind you, or we're going to get what we have always gotten from the OT. It's politics, and it's business, and maybe we need to promote the really free market to go to Chatham County and put some of those ideas up there so those guys don't have to keep building big boxes. But as somebody around here says, she wouldn't mind a target or something like that around here to go shopping. It is.
Okay, the time for public comment is done. Thanks.
It is, as personal as it is, number one, there's a whole bunch of priorities. Staff, I really trust and rely on staff time and staff advice. And it's not just Smith Level Road. There's many other roads that will be impacted by the traffic and the development, not only in Chatham County, but in other parts. All our surrounding counties, development is happening everywhere because this is a great place to live and do business. It's a blessing and a curse. And the whole delegation has been involved in this issue. I suggest to me, it is a political issue. I mean, you can't form just a task force to deal with trying to shut down a Walmart or Target or something like that. I think we need to, and if we're going to protect the watershed, as we always do as environmentalists, we need to include Jones Ferry Road and other roads that should be part of this, which includes other jurisdictions, again, and entities. So we can't do it on a fly as urgent as it feels to you personally, because somebody's going to pay for this, and it will be you and me and all the taxpayers of Carrboro. We have tried stopping the stuff, and we know what happens. And I think my 12 years in North Carolina had learned something about how things work in the General Assembly and how politics get made here in some of these projects, especially when it comes to the transportation issues. And I don't see the 800-pound gorilla any near here. I think community civic participation, coalition building will be more effective and working through other means that we are committed, our staff is committed, and have been working for many years on these issues, not only just this one, but all of them that impact us. It's like going to war, but if you want to go to war, you want to have a strategy and win. You don't want to be crushed and have a great start and then say, we should have thought about this before we spend it, all the ammunition in the first week of war. So I think we need to explore more. I need to know more. We need to get more players involved and more stakeholders involved. 100 people is great. It's a great start, but we need more than 100 people. And we need more stakeholders that have the power to deal with the powers we're going to be dealing with. So I commend and I support the concept, but I think I don't think we're ready to win this one yet.
Yes, Alex,
it was a motion and we're into discussion now.
Okay, could you repeat what the motion is? Because
The motion was to... The motion was to direct staff to work with Terry as the lead petitioner, Orange County, to develop a charge for the task force and to establish the task force and work with those people, I guess, and I'm the board liaison, to develop a charge for that task force.
So they would bring a resolution back that we would adopt
or
would consider.
Yeah, with a deadline for that, sure. How fast can we do this, gang?
Why don't we let them propose?
Oh, it's part of that charge.
As part of the charge, they have a deadline for their final.
I thought you were...
Okay.
Okay,
yeah.
I second that.
All right.
I just want to clarify that, as well as the transportation issues, are you thinking that would address the other items here, like the watershed protection and the trails and sidewalk questions?
In some respects, the work of this group will interface with the upcoming Greenways Committee and some of their work, and might some of this group's work might help inform and work with that. So obviously, Randy would be an important part as well.
Okay, that's a good point.
All right, there's a motion out there. It's been moved and seconded. I think it's time for us to vote on that. So, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. And those opposed, the matter passes 5-1.
Mark, I have one more point.
Yes.
Which is, I just want to make sure people are aware and also that we should be cognizant of. I think I copied you all on the email to do with the letter from Mark Aronson of the Metropolitan Planning Organization that he wrote in August 2005, raising a number of questions about the proposed Lemoore driveway that's going to front Smith Level there. And I learned, I guess today or yesterday, from Dale, must have been today, not yesterday, that no response from DOT was ever received to that letter. I anticipate, or I would guess, I guess I should say, that this is something that ought to be discussed at the MPO this month in terms of what else the MPO can do. So I want to raise that now to make sure that, you know, Alex is, you know, going to take that there. And if by chance you're not going to go, to be sure and let Mark know.
Yeah, so it might be a good time to actually get a status report on that.
Okay, that's all.
Can I just follow?
Yes.
It, you know, and it just appears that something that we may want to discuss with MPO members and other Assembly of Government members is sort of a consolidation, since all these areas are so close to each other, but all three of them have a different office for discussion. It seems to me it would be coordinated better if one office closer to this area of DOT would be more appropriate.
Just, I won't belabor, but just that there are these weird artifacts which are divisions which are actually separate from the MPO. The lines of the MPO don't have anything to do with the division lines, which have nothing. It makes no sense. This is old. You're pointing out something absolutely correct. Couldn't hurt to bring it up again. The issue has been raised of trying to reform division lines so that they make some sort of sense in the real world, and frankly, nothing's been done about it for a while. It's a good point.
Okay. We're going to take a
break.
6 1/4 minute break.
Okay.
Yeah.
You can continue your discussions in the hallway or not. We are on item D3, a report on the Bowling Creek Watershed Restoration Team.
Yes, and Will Autry, our environmental planner, is at the podium. Section 303D of the Clean Water Act requires the state to maintain a list of impaired waters. In January of this year, the North Carolina Division of Water Quality released the most recent draft of the 303D list. Although more downstream portions of Bowling Creek had been on the list in previous cycles, this year's list extended the impaired rating upstream into Carrboro's jurisdiction to Pathway Drive. Based on the rating, town staff was invited by the North Carolina Department of Environment and Natural Resources staff to participate in a watershed restoration effort. Staff would like to advise the board on this ongoing effort and ask the board's support for continued participation in the project. Take it away, Will.
I tried to make that as short as I could, Steve. I'm sorry.
You got to work on your editing.
It's a suitably short agenda item. See what you do with the presentation.
All right. Just a little background. This board and this town has obviously made a strong commitment to Bowling Creek, an ongoing commitment. Since 1994, we've had a contractor doing benthic macroinvertebrate monitoring for us. Excuse me, since 2000. Since 1994, we've been paying for monthly monitoring of water quality parameters in the creek there, and more recently in October of 2005, the board accepted the conservation areas map put forth by the Friends of Bowling Creek. In addition to that, the Morton and Little Creeks Local Watershed Plan, which the reports from that were put out in fall of 2004, laid out a number of opportunities for stream restorations and stormwater retrofits throughout the Morgan and Little Creeks watershed. Several of those were in the Bowling Creek area, and some preliminary cost-benefit analysis were done on those, and so these are good background steps leading us towards this restoration team. We also have the ongoing NPDES program. Many of the things that we'll be doing for that are going to be proactive steps for future development to prevent ongoing degradation of our waters. And then the big thing that's lingering is the Jordan Lake TMDL and nutrient management strategy. Right now, the Division of Water Quality thinks that by July the 1st, 2008, we may actually have an effective set of rules that will require additional nutrient removal for new development, not just the stormwater requirements that we presently have, but a specific nitrogen and phosphorus requirement, as well as for the town eventually within 4 years or so of the effective rule date to have nutrient reductions from existing development, the existing built upon impervious areas here in town. Based on history, the stream was added to the 303D list up into Carrboro to Pathway Drive recently due to impaired biological integrity, and I'll speak more on that in just a moment. And based on the history with the Morgan and Little Creeks Local Watershed Planning Effort, the EEP staff, or Ecosystem Enhancement Program staff, contacted Carrboro staff to ask us if we wanted to be a champion. Because of the Morgan and Little Creeks plan, because of the strong infrastructure we have with our next-door neighbors in Chapel Hill, Friends of Bowling Creek, Hall River Assembly, Morgan Creek Valley Alliance, and all types of organizations like that, they wanted us to try to talk to the Division of Water Quality and EPA about being a champion, trying to help us help ourselves to some 319 grant money to do work in the basin. So immediately we contacted Chapel Hill staff to ask them to be a co-champion with us. And just to give you an overview, we have here the Morgan Creek section here that is on the 303D list for impaired biological integrity, Bowling here, Booker, and then Little beyond that. And all of those streams are on for impaired biological integrity on the list. And then this is New Hope Creek, which is also on for a number of different factors. But that's the issue over in our southeast corner of Orange County here. A more close-up map shows you this particular site right here at Village Road, or actually Village Drive, has the state's determinations there have shown it go from good fare in 1993 for benthic macroinvertebrates good in 98 and then back down to poor fare in 2001 and down to staying fair in 2002. That sort of kind of a trend, which is a little bumpy along the way, of that site going downhill, is what has led to this extension from what had been down in here all the way up into Carver's jurisdiction up to Pathway Drive. So we now have a segment of Bowling Creek on the 303D list in our area. I'll also mention that that good, fair, good, that's a continuum, and so depending on the way the numbers fall, a good may not be that much different than a good fare in a given year. So that's kind of can address the bumpiness a little bit that I mentioned. But that's a closer look. So based on that invitation from EEP, Carver staff worked with the Division of Water Quality and EPA. We had some conversations about being a champion in what they're now calling a watershed restoration program. And so we had our first meeting here and discussed the possibility of a 2006 grant application, which is what the Division of Water Quality staff member had hoped for, and we immediately said there's no way we can possibly prepare a good grant by this past May 2006 when it was already April. So we've had some subsequent meetings, involved a number of different parties, Chapel Hill, Carborough, EPA, Division of Water Quality, EAT, Clean Water Management Trust Fund, and we've worked out a stepwise plan for the short term that will lead us on this long-term program of being a Bowling Creek Watershed Restoration Team and trying to remove this stream from the 303D list through a number, we hope, of 319 grants. So the steps we've laid out is, first of all, to let you know what's going on and for the Chapel Hill staff to do the same with their town council. We've sent in an application today for some EPA assistance to help us with some additional preliminary studies, and we're also going to be applying in October for a Clean Water Management Trust Fund mini-grant for a geomorphic analysis that will help us identify or better identify and isolate a particular retrofit sites for stormwater structures. We also want to invite additional stakeholders and partners, such as the Friends of Bowling Creek and the Hall River Assembly and OWASA and the UNC Board and other members who are property owners or interested stakeholders in the group to the table to talk with us and immediately or as soon as possible begin conducting some outreach with landowners who may be affected by possible stormwater retrofits with their property. And these steps will lead us towards our application of a 319 grant in May 2007. And so the staff would encourage the board to accept this presentation and adopt the resolution there, and I'd be happy to try to answer any questions you may have.
If I could just jump right in, Will, I think I mostly understood that. Break it down for us, though. What types of things are really being, you know, hypothetically at least, are being contemplated? Like when you say an ecosystem enhancement or stormwater management feature that might be added, what are we talking about?
Well, the stream has experienced, because of the built-upon areas here in Carborough and Chapel Hill, it experiences a flashy hydrograph, which means that when it rains, all the water runs off the impervious areas and reaches the stream very fast and doesn't infiltrate into the ground and flow through the ground slowly to the stream. So when it rains, the Bowling Creek floods like crazy, and when it doesn't rain for 3 weeks at a time, there's barely a little trickle in there. Well, this makes it very hard for the organisms to survive in the stream. And so in order to address that, and that also causes erosion along the stream banks, in order to address that, we need to put in some detention structures, just like new development does every day now, to hold back the flow of the water over a longer time period.
So like a slow-draining pond, basically, that would even out the amount of water.
It will reduce that peak in the hydrograph, exactly, and have a more level flow through the stream. And once we hold that peak back and get that addressed, then we can go back in future years and do some stream bank restoration of the slopes that have been eroding because of that flush. And hopefully, with that, the habitat will be sufficient to entice the organisms back to the system.
And I guess, you know, I mean, in principle, that sounds really good. Your predecessor in your current role, at one point, I guess it must have been one of those earlier presentations you were referencing, put up a series of different slides or maps that showed some particular sites that might be candidate sites,
right,
where this, and forgive the crudity of referring to it as a slow-draining pond, but where that type of feature might be, where that type of thing might be created. And I guess I don't have it in front of me here, and I don't remember, but I mean, I remember being kind of troubled by, you know, the different sites that were put forward saying, well, gosh, you know, one of them was, well, they weren't all related necessarily to Bowling Creek, as this particular,
sure,
request are, but one of them was, you know, next to the Carborough Cemetery, or, you know, and one of them was on some property that I think the school board owns over by Carborough Elementary, or
yes, sir,
these types of things.
Exactly, which is why we want to start this landowner outreach as soon as we possibly can, because there are going to be some major hurdles to overcome. You're right, we had a site at Wilson Park and Carborough Elementary, two of the ones that are in Bowling Creek, that would have major, you know, implications for the public. The removal of the trees that are there at Carborough Elementary to place that wetland, possible constructed wetland, or the loss of use of some of Wilson Park to obtain an improvement and water quality downstream, the loss of some of that space, but could also be offset by fantastic educational benefits at either of those locations,
mm-hmm,
in a constructed wetland and teaching people about ecosystems. So, yes, the Morning Little Creeks Plan identified 12 stream restorations and 25 stormwater retrofit sites in the entirety of that basin, the larger basin. Within the Bowling Creek area, that's 3 stream restoration sites and only 8 stormwater retrofits. But what we think, that's a good starting place for us, but we think that over time we're going to need a lot more than that to actually make this happen over many years. And and one of the things I think I should mention is that when we were discussing this at our first meeting, one of the questions was, were we eligible for 319 money to do these projects? Because of our MPDS program, and any mandated retrofits or stream restorations that you're required to do by some other state or federal program, you're not eligible for that 319 money to do those if you've already been, you know, mandated to do them. So the MPDS program doesn't require us to do any retrofitting. What will require us to do retrofitting 4 or 5 years down the road from now is the Jordan Lake rules. So this gives us, we have a limited window of opportunity here to have the Division of Water Quality and EPA help us help ourselves to some money to do these things that 5 years down the road we won't be eligible for that same grant funding.
And can you just, I don't mean to hog the microphone here, I know some of the other members of the board want to speak, but could you just give us an idea of, like, what's the scale of money that you think might be involved in the 319 program?
Well, excuse me.
Not the whole program, but I mean,
sure,
that might come to bear in the Bowling Creek watershed.
Well, I mentioned initially that mini grants would be a $50,000 mini grant, which we would apply for this fall, of which Chapel Hill and Carver would be required to cover a 10% cash match.
Right.
Of $5,000. Ultimately, for next May, the 319 money, depending on the projects that we elect, could be in the hundreds of thousands of dollars eventually, I mean, easily over a number of years. But our plan would be to do this in year after year after year. And we've been selected as there were only a handful of watersheds selected with the type of infrastructure that we have here to be really the folks who are giving out the 319, who award the 319 grants are sitting at a table with us, helping us do our 319 grant application. So we're really in a great position here to do that. But there will be substantial, you know, the fiscal impact could be large. The good news is that we have a great opportunity for in-kind match for the 319 that we don't have with this Clean Water Management Trust Fund mini grant. So the staff time that our staff and Chapel Hill staff and some other projects that Ecosystem Enhancement Program is doing kind of in the area, the federal government has been very liberal with allowing that type of thing to count as a match. So if the Ecosystem Enhancement Program is doing a study on a watershed in Durham at the same time frame that we're trying to build a constructed wetland at Wilson Park, we may be able to use that for our match and not have to come up with any money out of out of the general fund.
Okay. All right. I'll stop now. I'm sorry. Joel.
I guess one of those questions is there going to be some board discussion about the selection of those projects that we want the funding for and what that criteria is? Because I can be quite frank with you. When you start talking about changing Wilson Park, we don't have a lot of park space. We don't have the money to develop Martin Luther King Park at this time. It's because we just, you know, we're not in the back making money. So we could, but that gets you into some federal trouble, mm-hmm. which I don't really want to do any federal time right now. Don't want to do any state time either, so let's be clear. So I'm a little troubled. I think there needs to be some wider community discussion about, A, if we're going to do that to Wilson Park, what the benefits are and what the offsets are going to be. And, I hate to talk about Wilson Park, so I'll move to Carver Elementary. And, you know, we're going to have to discuss that with the entity that owns Carver Elementary, which would be the Chapel Hill Carver Schools, who are funded by Orange County. So I can understand that conversation going really quickly. So I guess, as all conversations in Orange County go, and so I guess my question is, what's going to be the criteria? Because I remember the discussion we had about which particular projects are we going to pick. I don't have a problem with going for that first $50,000, but I think some point in the assessment, there's going to have to be some sort of, criteria that you can check off to decide, is that what we're going to do?
Right.
Let me jump in, if I may, because I anticipate there would be a thorough discussion with this board before any commitments made on any project. And even before that, I can tell you there's going to be some more heart-to-heart conversations at the staff level about things like Wilson Park and the elementary school, because we had heart-to-heart talks when Noah was here about that, and you may recall when that EAP report was presented, that actually wound up being a lower priority than it initially was because of the concern of balancing the environmental needs with the recreational needs there and making sure we weren't giving up more than we should be giving up. And that's not even a decision at the staff level that I'm supportive of yet that we would go there. So you all will certainly be involved in that.
Could I follow up on that just briefly? Obviously, for the board to have the discussion is paramount. I mean, we're here at your pleasure. But I also wanted to mention the idea that at some point in the not-too-distant future, hard decisions are going to have to be made on how places like Durham, Chapel Hill, and Carver, and all of us in the upper New Hope arm of Jordan Lake are going to reach these lofty goals of nitrogen and phosphorus reductions. And at some point, everyone is going to have to come to grips with that understanding that, you know, Wilson Park and Carver Elementary that are already owned by the people, rather than trying to fight with a few private landowners in a spot. That's the difficulty. And I completely understand it's a pros and cons things. But at some point in the future, we're going to have to do these things, and finding locations for them, it gets harder and harder every day, not easier. And I don't want everyone to be alarmed about Wilson Park. That's not on our list right now.
I just want to say that, you know, people, I think you need to have a wider community discussion so people can weigh the decisions, even though we do own the park. And the only other analogy I will put it to is this, that when you affect a school and its ability to provide education, and it's a neighborhood school, people walk to that school, many different communities have been injured because of a decision was to close a school. And I can name a number in this small community and communities next door to us. So I certainly understand the goal of meeting all of those environmental requirements, but there's a cost to everything. We need to be serious about what it's going to cost. And I'm not talking money.
Yeah.
I'm talking social good.
Alex and then Jackie.
yeah, I think Joel's point is very well taken. And, Will, although I think your presentation in prompting those questions is right on the money. We need to hear what the real deal is and understand what's coming at us, whether we like it or not, which, of course, are the upcoming Jordan Lake rules, and that we're going to have to comply with them one way or another. And so by beginning this discussion now and dealing with the issues, Joel, that you've raised, this is the time to get started in really understanding what kind of landscape we're operating in. So I really appreciate your candor in that.
Jackie.
I'd like to ask that the folks involved with this project keep close tabs and actually become involved with the Greenways initiatives that are underway right now. There'll be a Greenway Summit in October. There's going to be a planning meeting for the summit of all of the appointees from advisory boards sometime soon. That I forget what the date is.
September 13th.
So even though they're different issues, they're the same space that we're talking about. So let's keep up with each other so there aren't any surprises or conflicts.
There will be a planning staff person at those meetings, as well as Rec and Parks.
Okay. Just keep up with it.
One of the things the team looks forward to doing after me making this presentation to you and after Town Council in Chapel Hill has heard this is we want to start inviting many other people to participate in this process.
Great.
So that's something that's definitely a goal of ours because we want everyone to be involved and have a stake in mm-hmm. this if it's going to be this long-term project.
Right.
We want everyone's involvement and participation.
Great. Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you so
briefly.
Much.
Thank you.
I appreciate your work, and I hope you get your money someday to do all the right things we need to do. But did I hear you right? Retrofitting all this stuff means we're never going to get rid of the mosquitoes in Carrboro, right? We're always going to have an environment where we can breed mosquitoes because we don't want to have dry stuff.
Seriously,
right?
What's the deal with that?
Are we talking about the slow drainage again?
Are these features that were – are these things that we would be building mosquito habitat?
If a constructed wetland, which is what a lot of these things would be, or a bioretention cell, those types of structures, if they're appropriately built and maintained, they should not be habitats for breeding habitats for mosquitoes. In a constructed wetland, like was suggested for Carver Elementary, it not only can be a little ecosystem to itself, but can be a great teaching tool to see that interaction, that biology occurring. And
the mosquito
larvae are eaten by the little fish that are living in the wetlands. So
okay.
it's a whole system, and by the dragonflies, you know, the ones that make it out of the water. So,
all right. Well, by the mosquito population, you would think that there was a lot of wetland around Carver Elementary already, I can report. But anyway, all right, well, I don't raise all these questions to poo-poo what you're doing, Will, but rather to just say I think it's important to really get this out here and realize what we really are all talking about. So thanks for your report, and I think
move the attached resolution.
Okay. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Matter passed unanimously. Thanks very much. Okay. We are on to agenda item D4, and it is becoming late.
We don't need a long presentation.
Can I just, as a process matter, as I understand it, this is really just a request to set a public hearing.
That's
so the only
is.
Decision we have to make tonight is whether to take it to public hearing or not. So just in hopes that will forestall lengthy discussion.
Well, I point that that's a good point. Let me also say we do have item D6 after this, and we also need to have a brief executive session after the end of our agenda.
And
so
do you want to draw these?
I'd just like to start by saying that I'm against moving it to public hearing. The community came together for a long time and not easily, and worked out the mechanisms for the neighborhood protection overlay zone. I don't want to start messing with it. We worked this out. I'm not going to have my mind changed in a public hearing. I think that it would be very confusing and infuriating to the community to, after going through all that we went through to get the neighborhood protection overlay zone, to then turn around and have a public hearing on ways that, we're going to tweak it. So I'm not interested in wasting anybody's time or money in taking it to public hearing. So I would vote no. Yeah. That would.
Other thoughts from board members about this subject? Do the board members want any refresher from the staff about what this?
Do we want to? Oh yeah. What's the deal here? Somebody wants to build higher buildings, or
they want to change the
setbacks
for the.
Is there something briefly you could say about this, Trish? I recall having a whole conversation already about this at a previous meeting, but if you could take the podium very briefly.
Well, y'all can read what you said in a minute.
Yeah.
Which is attachment B.
B for minutes.
I just have a few maps of the downtown and images, and as well as what's in the proposed. Mr. Ripperton's text amendment has been submitted to you in relation to a particular project in the downtown, which has an application is under development for a conditional use permit. But the property that they're looking at has rights of way on many sides, essentially, and the way the language in the ordinance is written for the B1C and the B1G zoning districts, in order to get your four-story buildings, you need to be on a property that has at least a 50-foot right-of-way. And so three of these rights-of-way in our records are less than 50 feet. And this one is shown as 50 here in this illustration, but our information shows that we have a 60-foot right-of-way out on South Greensboro Street. So three of the boundaries on this particular site would not be eligible for the four-story building currently. They would be limited to three stories, and they would need to, right now, dedicate the full additional width of the street to make it 50-foot right-of-way. And this request was submitted in relation to this. Mr. Ripperton is here tonight to, you know, elaborate on that point. But currently, the provision in the ordinance says you need to dedicate to create a 50-foot right-of-way if you want to be able to get that four stories in those two zoning districts. And this okay. This particular site has some limitations.
We're not being asked to do spot zoning.
Okay.
Here, are we?
No. This okay. is, and this is a map that just shows it's in your packet.
That's the level of okay. refreshment that I
all
required
right.
about this situation. Alex.
I was willing to entertain the idea of looking at it. However, I think Jackie's point is very well taken. It wasn't just the process of creating the neighborhood preservation district. It was the process of creating this whole series of rules which allow us to do this stuff. And a lot of compromises were made, but ultimately the question that people were asking us was, just finish this up and tell us what the rules are and then we'll work within them. And we've done that. And I frankly agree, Jackie, with your logic that on a case-by-case basis, it's really inappropriate at this time to start making changes that could be global in nature. Damn it, people know better than that. And so I will support Jackie's if that's a motion to deny the request.
Well, it's a non-motion.
Yeah.
And I know you worked really hard on that committee as well.
I'm kind of inclined to leave the situation alone. So I don't know whether we need a motion or.
Well,
make things simple, that would be helpful.
The other, I mean,
okay,
just
I would like
move
to,
not
move
to not to send it forward or move to send it.
I move that we not send this item forward to public hearing.
Second.
Thank you.
All right. It's been moved and seconded that we decline to hold a public hearing on this subject. Cannot remember the last time this has happened. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed, matter passes unanimously. We are on to agenda. We have pulled agenda item D5 and are appointing to the Iwasa Board and are moving, waiting to consider that matter on September 19th when Alderman Haven O'Donnell can be with us. Item D6, appointment of representative to serve on the Carolina North Fiscal Impact Study Committee. I want to, possibility was raised by one board member by email, and I would like to endorse this notion that perhaps it would be appropriate to simply have a discussion about the proposed Carolina North Fiscal Impact Study and study committee rather than making a decision about that. We not necessarily attempt to make a decision about this subject tonight. I just want to throw it out there because I don't think I know enough about the situation to make a decision tonight.
Is this to study the impact that Carolina North will have on the surrounding communities? And does that include things like, you know, my big thing for the past 4 or 5 years has been I want the university to pay the impact fees that everybody else has to pay and the connection fees. Is it that? Is it, you know, what's it going to cost us as far as police and traffic and being able to get a seat at Elmo's?
Not about a seat at Elmo's, but I think it's most of the rest of the things that you just mentioned.
So you're asking about the scope of work.
Yes, that would be my question.
I think basically it's been, some people have argued that there are so many financial benefits to the community overall from the proposed development at Carolina North that
that they shouldn't have to pay the impact fee?
Well, that we should be grateful, let me put it that way.
Aren't we going a little more to the discussion of, for me, because it's late and I can tell I'm getting really, really less patient, is what information do we want to make the decision? If there's further information out there for us to make the decision, what are we expecting staff to bring back to us so we can make the decision on whatever date that would be? Would it be the 19th or whatever, first day in October, so that we can not dilly-dally around, waste each other's time? Let's just determine what else we'd like to know. Alderman Coleman, in an email, mentioned the fact that there's some letter that was sent to the Chapel Hill mayor, or the mayor sent to Chancellor Meeser. So if that is accessible to...
If we could get a copy of that letter.
Actually included the relevant section.
I want to see it all. That's just how I am. I like to see the whole thing. Because I want to be able to know what everybody else knows so I can make an informed decision about what I want to do. So, if you could identify the letter for the staff and see if they can get a copy and any other documents that we need to make the decision, and then we can decide when are we going to make that decision and go on. Because I'm going to spend a lot of time on it.
Mark?
What?
Dan?
Yeah, the other thing, and I don't know that we want to talk about this tonight, per se. I'm hearing maybe we want to postpone the actual discussion as well. But, you know, the point I made in the email is that the genesis of this was Chapel Hill requesting a discussion with UNC, between Chapel Hill and UNC, and that's what the letter that Joel's referring to speaks to. And we had in our packet the chancellor's response, which was, I guess, addressed to Mark. They're requesting that the discussion include Orange County and Carrboro, as well as Chapel Hill. It's not framed, you know, quite so much as a discussion. It's like, hey, this is the way we're going to do it. But the point is that, you know, we won't know till next week if Chapel Hill's going to agree to that or not. So I think that's important information for us in making our own decision. And then even if they do, you know, we might want to have some discussion 2 weeks from now on, you know, do we see a joint discussion of involving three local government parties as best serving Carborough's interest or not? Or do we want to, you know, focus on, have our own discussion with the university that focuses on what Carborough's needs are? Because, you know, some of those, some of the issues are going to be the same and some may be different. And, yes, I think that's another piece of it that we might want to look at that time. But we will. So I guess what I'm suggesting is that I don't know that there's a lot that needs to come from staff on this, but I think we need to see what Chapel Hill is going to do and see what's on the table then and think about the implications for us.
Well, do we want to separately talk to the university about what we want? Or, you know, if, let's say Chapel Hill says they don't want to participate. Does that mean we don't participate? Or do we say, well, maybe we will participate or we won't participate? I'm just asking. I'm just trying to figure out how.
You know what we want, right?
Well, those kind of questions are sort of part of, that's sort of why I said, well, I don't know what I want to do with this. If I can jump in and share my thought, which is, you know, I guess my concern is that you can find a consultant to tell you whatever you want to hear.
Exactly.
I don't mean to suggest that anybody's trying to be disingenuous about all of this, but there's bound to be some pretty fundamental differences of opinion out there about what the impacts of Carolina North will be, positive and negative. And I almost question the value of commissioning this type of study, not because of who the consultant might be or whatever, but because I just think that there could be as many different results as there are consultants out there to hire. And I don't know what level of confidence I would really place in results of such a process. Yeah. Joel, I interrupted you, so I'm going to...
Well, no, that's the only other thing I would say is this. If we're going to have a discussion about whether we're going to participate, then we need to decide what kind of information do we want prior to having that discussion. And we need to lay it out. Is there something that staff needs to do? Are we going to wait for Chapel Hill to see what they're going to do? What sort of factors, what sort of input are we going to get from our own representatives and previous representatives on the /Horace Williams mm-hmm. committee? What I'm saying is, what is going to be the mechanism and what is going to be the information that we use? We can have the discussion later. I don't think we would be served well if we had the discussion right now. That we don't have the sufficient information. The next question is, what kind of information? I have said I wanted the March 1st, 2005 letter, just to see it for myself. And then we can decide, are we going to discuss it on the 19th or are we going to discuss it in October? Have the discussion and make some sort of decision, respond to Chapel Hill, and go on about our business and live with whatever decision we make. But I don't want to spend more than an hour discussing it, because I think it would be ill-advised. We got a lot of other things on our plate, and we need to just get off the pot and go on.
Well, Mr. Manager, how is your agenda shaping up for September 19th, as long as we're on that topic?
Pretty busy. If you're looking at an hour discussion, you're talking about a late night.
Well, I'm just...
I said no more than an hour.
I'm optimistic that it might not take that long.
Let me ask this.
Sure.
Why is this so time sensitive?
I don't know that it is.
It doesn't strike me as being time sensitive. I mean, if we're going to...
The letter that he's responding to was March 1st, 2005.
I'm real.
The one reason it could be time sensitive is because of the trustee's schedule for a Carolina North application by basically a year from now. So if the idea is that this study should be completed by then, you know, then that puts some onus on the need to get started. But, you know, time sensitive within our 19th meeting or our October 3rd meeting, you know, I don't know that that would be an issue.
Yeah. Jack can pick the poison.
I think we definitely need to have this conversation, because what they do out of Carolina North could negate any kind of increased non-residential tax revenue thing we're working on. There are all kinds of ways that can really siphon money off of our town. So I think it's very, very important who they hire, if they hire somebody, because as we've all seen a million times, you hire the, you know, it's like, reading the Bible. You can find what you want to support whatever it is you want. So
you changing to be, churches till you
yeah.
like the message.
But, so I think we need. So I think we should have this conversation in October when we have time to have it.
But then the issue is whether or not we want to participate.
Well, let's decide that after we talk about it.
I'd suggest October 3rd looks a little
works for
less
me.
Formidable than September 19th.
Okay. Well, that
let's just get the
that suits me just fine. I'll just throw it out there that there's only so much that the university and the state of North Carolina are going to be willing to do, and there's only so little that we would be willing to accept. And I don't actually think as a practical matter that what some consultant tells us is his or her analysis of the whole situation will necessarily inform where those two things line up.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I don't mean to be cynic.
No, but it'll provide a year's worth of drama.
Yeah, exactly.
We don't have enough of that.
Let's say something, Mr. Major. I mean, the chancellor is only asking us to designate a representative. Obviously, there's some politics going on here forever. You're on the table, you're not on the table. And they're going to do it with us, without us.
Curiously, they've already done a fiscal impact study without us
before.
I'm not being critical of that. I'm just saying, but so it's interesting that, you know,
well, then,
a second study.
I'm just saying, if disingenuous or not ingenuous or whatever, we either need to make the decision and then you can decide. The board can decide how they want to approach this for Carolina North. Mm-hmm. I'm not taking a position.
Me either.
So, I just...
To interrupt, but the problem here is there's an old phrase which is called talking through your hat.
Sure.
And that is exactly what we're all doing. we don't have the information in front of us to even, not necessarily make a decision, but to have a productive conversation about how we're going to make a decision. So how about this? Why don't we just get the relevant information that shows us what the history is behind this thing, what it is they're trying to accomplish, and hash through that, do our homework, and go through it on the 3rd. How about that?
That's fine with me. Mm-hmm. Is that a motion?
Yeah.
I'll second it.
Okay, maybe we can attempt to get a copy of the fiscal impact study that I claimed a moment ago had already been done as well.
Also, there's there's two historical documents from Chapel Hill that were provided to the Leadership Advisory Committee a couple weeks ago on fiscal equity issues. So that's something that could be in the packet.
All right. So
anything you have, Dan, that you could share so we don't have to chase it down would be helpful.
To the extent, I'm afraid I don't have any of that stuff. But
I have the FOI letter.
All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passed unanimously. We need to have a motion for an executive session to discuss
closed session
to discuss
real estate acquisition, property acquisition.
Second.
You're too late. It's already been moved and seconded. Moved by Alex and seconded by Dan. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passed unanimously. Please turn off the television lights.